2022.
Hi, I'm Saida Garrett, co-writer of Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mr. Mark Tara.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the persons appearing on the program.
Today on Rainbow Country, openly gay country artist and a former professional baseball player, Brian Ruby joins me to talk about his journey from baseball to country. All that and more on episode 425, so stay tuned. The Gay Talk Radio right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, this is Carol Pope.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir.
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato.
Hi, I'm Gordep of the Spoons. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Welcome to yet another new journey through Rainbow Country. As I like to call it, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm producer and host, Mark Tara. By the way, Rainbow Country originates from CIUT-FM in Toronto, and now proudly in syndication across Canada from coast to coast to coast. The Yukon, British Columbia, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, the east coast of Canada in Newfoundland, Ontario, even down to Buffalo, New York, and online. Well, thanks to you tuning in, streaming, downloading, but ultimately listening. Together, we continue to build Rainbow Country into a nationally syndicated gay radio show, as well as being recognized as a number one Canadian LGBT podcast. So today, openly gay country artist and former professional baseball player Brian Ruby is my guest and joins me to talk about his new music, as well as being the first professional baseball player to come out. Plus, in hour two, music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house. And on this episode, I'm featuring some classic house, some queer electronic, and more. All that lies ahead as we start Journey 425 through Rainbow Country. And our first stop, the Rainbow Country Bookstore. Today, queer author Tate Barkley reads from his memoir, Sunday Dinners, Moonshine, and Men. A book that recounts Tate's childhood growing up in the small towns of North Carolina, where money was tight, dreams seldom came true, and family secrets were kept hidden. By the way, on Amazon.ca, Sunday Dinners, Moonshine, and Men has a rating of 5 out of 5 stars.
I wish culture shock was my only problem at Thompson. Before coming here, I had developed an attraction to Latinos. They were a minority at Thompson Intermediate School, but one guy caught my eye. Jorge Lascano was on the 8th grade football team. We would often practice late and had to shower together. His locker was close to mine, and I could practically feel him before seeing him walk into the room. I tried to avoid eye contact with Jorge, who was close friends with a macho, slender white guy on the team named Justin Mincer. Justin Mincer oozed what people today call toxic masculinity. Even at an early age, I saw him as a potential bully and didn't want to draw his attention. I got through most of the season without any incidents, but with only a few games left, the coach asked Jorge, myself, and several others on the team to stay late to work on some things. By the time we made it to the showers, most of the rest of the team was gone, and it was only Jorge and me with a few stragglers. I tried everything to resist, but the old feelings of desire were overwhelming me. Jorge was walking around in a jockstrap, laughing and razzing the other guys as he usually did. I could not resist looking at him. He and I undressed about the same time on this day. I had stupidly made a point to pace myself to track Jorge. We wound up showering next to each other. I thought I was being covert and clever. I was looking for a quick glimpse of him, nothing more. I must have hesitated a few seconds too long while looking at his penis. I only wish I had turned away to make it seem accidental. Jorge looked over and caught my glance. I watched his eyes widen as he realized what was happening. I tried to look up at his face, but as if I had lost all control, I wound up looking down at his penis again. "Barkley," he said, catching my attention. I immediately felt flushed and tried to look away, but it was too late. I only became more aroused and started to develop an erection. My body had completely betrayed me, and there was nowhere to hide. Then Jorge asked, "Barkley, are you a fag?" He started laughing. "Barkley, up here," he said, directing me to look at his eyes. "Are you looking at my dick? Are you a fag? Are you a fucking fag?" He had caught me, and even though I denied it, I still couldn't stop looking at him. I think I was having an out-of-body experience or a non-alcoholic-related blackout. Everything was in slow motion. It was surreal. "So, Barkley, you like my dick," he said, louder for anyone within earshot to hear. This had turned from curiosity to harassment. "So you want some of it?" he said, waving it at me. "Are you a fag that wants some of it? Is that it?" Bile rose in my mouth and I wanted to retch. "Jorge, shut the fuck up," I shouted. "I was not looking at your dick." Jorge looked at me up and down, hesitated and grinned. What I thought was beautiful about him changed into something weasel-like. I wanted to run away, but now the entire locker room was listening and moving closer to us. "I thought you might be a fag," he said. Then he said it, the words I'd been hearing all my life. "Boy, you're as queer as a $3 bill. Jorge left the shower. I did not follow. I lingered in hopes it would all just go away. Jorge must have gotten bored with me that day or had somewhere to go because he stopped the harassment. But from then on, any time after practice, if I dressed near him or we showered at the same time, he would say, "Are you looking, Barkley? Are you looking?" One day he was walking around in a jock strap, calling me a fag and asking if I liked his tidy whities as we got dressed. When his friend and fellow asshole Mincer walked in, Jorge decided to involve him in the fun as we walked up the door. "Hey, Mincer, guess what? Barkley's a fag. I caught him looking at my dick while we were in the showers. Barkley wants it." Mincer walked over, thumped my ear. "Are you a fag, Barkley? Oh, my God. We have one in the locker room." Mincer was a mean-spirited bully who loved to harass and insult everyone. Now I was in his sights as the worst possible thing, a fag.
Up next, country artist Brian Ruby.
Hi, everybody. This is Gino Vanelli. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
In the schoolyard, it's that box of 45s at your cousin's house that you turned on, cranked up and wore them all out. It's waking up to snow on Christmas Day, the last pick kid with the winning play. It's that first real kiss in the dashboard light. Didn't see it coming, but it changed your life. Gotta be who you are and do what you can, but don't miss a living, just make
Good. Thanks for having me on. How's it going?
Well, thank you for asking. I am well, and thank you for being here to have your voice, your story be heard by the LGBT community and beyond. So thank you for this, Brian Ruby. You are a singer, a songwriter, a musician. You are a country artist. You're part of the LGBT community. You're also an athlete. You are, I believe, a former professional baseball player. Is that, are you still playing baseball?
I'm done. I hung up my spikes, and I'm just doing music right now. But I was juggling for a couple years there. I love playing baseball. My dad is a baseball coach back home, but I came out when I was playing ball in 2021 and played for a bit longer after that. And then had some offers to continue playing ball, but I decided to just go all in with the music thing.
Here
we are in Nashville doing music today.
Here we are today. So in 2020, I believe it was 2020, that you won season 7 of the Nashville Rising Song Competition. As a songwriter, you've written songs that have been on the Texas country charts, on the iTunes country charts. Well done to you for that. For yourself, when did you start discovering your love and your appreciation for music? When did this start happening for you?
I've loved music since I was a kid. I mean, I would listen. I had an old iPod Nano that it could hold like 15 songs. And I would spend hours trying to decide what song should I put on, you know, and I would listen to my hometown country radio station. Mm. And actually worked for them when I was in high school, got a job there. And I've always been into music, and I've always kind of like sports and music kind of always went hand in hand with me. I gravitated to country because whenever you're on the baseball field, there's always like a lot of country music that's around. So that was always in that environment. And I just like the melodies. I'm a melody guy. I'm always the guy here in Nashville who's in the writer's room trying to come up with a catchy melody. And, but I gravitated towards the melodies and the storytelling. And, you know, there was not a ton of LGBTQ plus representation in country music that I could hear in the mainstream when I was growing up, but I kind of wanted to.
Yeah, Conway Twitty wasn't really cutting it for the gays.
Hello, darling. Yeah, right. Definitely there was not a lot of visible representation, although from what I've heard, there have been LGBTQ plus people making country music in there. For a while, sure. But it's only in recent years due to the fight of the generation that came before me, people fighting for our rights and representation down here, that somebody like me as a newer artist can just be out and proud from the start of my career and not have to hide at all and just make the music I want to make and tell my stories, tell my real life. All my songs are real life storytelling about my life. So it's just authentic, and it's my three chords and the truth.
Ain't it interesting when a society evolves, what can happen? You have new music out, Found and Lost. This is your current EP, Found and Lost. How would you describe the sonic landscape of this 6-song EP?
Sonically, it is, let's just say, heartbreak anthems.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of country mixed with a little bit of rock. There's a whole lot of emotion in there. As someone who's out in country music, and I've found that like a lot of guys, a lot of straight guys in country music are afraid to touch on vulnerability and emotion. And I think that's my superpower, really. I've tried to channel everything that I was feeling. I went through a really tough breakup not too long ago, and just I had a partner for about 3.5-4 years, and that person just kind of decided to leave one day without saying why and left me in the dust. And I have a song in the beginning of the EP called Goes Without Saying. Love goes without saying goodbye. And so the whole project was really just a very creative songwriter thing for me. I'm a writer, and I needed to write what I was feeling. I read a book called The Five Stages of Grief. And when you lose someone, whether that's a death or someone, a romantic partner that just kind of leaves and doesn't explain why, you're left with like a lot of feelings that you got to work through. And songwriting is my therapy. And, just kind of going through each of those stages, like I went through in my life, and trying to make something out of this terrible thing that happened. And the last song in the record, which is called Lost on Me, which I wrote with David Ritz, who is a awesome songwriter, Grammy Award winning songwriter. The kind of theme that we have going is you know, the EP is called Found and Lost, as in I found love and then I lost it. And the last song on the EP is called Lost on Me, where the hook goes, what I found ain't lost on me. You know, I learned what I wanted in a relationship and what I didn't want, and some red flags to look out for next time. And it's kind of just like this whole personal journey. We have a song called Return a Ring, which is like our biggest kind of bop on the record. It's very radio friendly, very, very upbeat, which is kind of like a little songwriting trick that I've keyed in on. Some of my favorite songs, like there's an iconic Billy Joel song, Only the Good Die Young. If you actually break down the lyrics, it's actually pretty sad, but when you listen to it, it sounds like a bop. So I kind of tried to make Return a Ring like a feel good bop, even though it's about giving back the ring that you, thought you were going to wear forever, let's just say. And, it really is a heartbreak anthem, and it's a fun song to play live. And it's kind of, you know, I've met a lot of people and I've gotten messages from a lot of people who have not just in the US, but up in Canada and across the world, who have related to these songs and have lost somebody themselves, or whether that's a lover or a trusted family member or friend. And it's been a journey, a heartbreak journey, but we are slowly but surely coming out of it to greener pastures ahead.
You just mentioned Lost on Me. You just released a new music video for this. Yeah. What was that experience like doing essentially a live performance of it in a club setting?
Yeah.
How was that experience for you?
It was cool. I'm an independent artist, so there really is no big budget. Like the big music videos that you see on CMT or on YouTube, like that cost a ton of money, are not really in my, not really reachable for me yet. Because we're hustling and playing different bars and honky tonks. And, you know, I got my tip jar open and fighting to really pay rent and keep this music dream alive. So what we decided to do was just capture the environment that I'm in every night. And we shot it at the Lipstick Lounge, which is an iconic LGBTQ space here in Nashville, part of the Lesbian Bar Project. And I know the owner, Krista, is a super supporter of mine. So it was really cool to shoot that video in Nashville in front of a live audience that was at an actual show. It wasn't recreated or staged. That was just at one of our shows. And I've been on a tour that I'm calling the Heartbreak Tour. And I was on the road all summer, and I just got a quick little break, but I'm headed back for the last couple weeks of the year to finish out the tour. I got like 15 more shows coming up.
Wow.
It was just cool to shoot it. Yeah. It was and I hope people like the video.
So you're a country artist. You're based in Nashville. You're part of the LGBT community. You are openly gay. Country music and being gay don't necessarily go at least up until recent history, you don't necessarily think of one with the other, per se. For you, on your country music journey, have you experienced any sort of, like, rejection, homophobia, that sort of thing, from within, you know, the country music scene?
Yeah, I have a bit. I feel like, you know, things are getting better slowly but surely. I've definitely heard people in Nashville say, you know, why are you talking about that? Or we don't need to know that. It's more like, it's like some people are still stuck in the don't ask, don't tell world. But I say, you know, this is a genre that's supposed to be about three chords in the truth. And this is my three chords in the truth. This is my life. You know, I'm not forcing anything on anybody. I'm really just singing songs about my life. And I try to write all my songs in a way that no matter who you are, where you're from, or what you do, you can relate to it in some way. You know, everybody wants to find love, regardless of who you are, where you're from, or who you're attracted to. Mm-hmm. So it's, I try to tell it in a more universal message. But there have been some comments, and I do get stuff on social media. I would say it's probably 90% positive, but there's always, I'm always wary. And I actually, I have a folder mm-hmm. on my phone of screenshots of, mm-hmm. of comments that are like hate mail. Mm. My hate mail folder. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I need a little extra motivation, when I've just got off the road and I'm exhausted and I'm mm-hmm. wondering, you know, why am I doing this? And, mm-hmm. and I look at that and I realize, you know, I would have killed to have seen somebody like me making radio friendly, upbeat country music that's from the heart, told in an authentic way. And just being themselves and singing their truth, someone who's out and proud. You know, I would have killed to see that in the mainstream when I was a kid. So there have been trailblazers in country music, Lavender Country, Ty Herndon, Brandy Clark. There's so many now, Orville Peck, Shelley Wright, Shelley Fairchild. I mean, there's Brooke Eden, Lily Rose. There are a ton of country singers down here who are LGBTQ plus and fighting for representation in the genre, just like I am. But I just didn't want to hide. I was sick and tired of hiding, and was aware that there would be some backlash. But at the end of the day, I really just believe in the songs, and I believe that no matter who you are or where you're from, you can get behind my music. And I do play a lot of places that are super country, super redneck. You know, I'll be at a bar in a small little town, just in the middle of the country. And I take a lot of pride in being able to do my show and have all kinds of people have a good time. And then maybe they already know that I'm gay. Maybe they don't, or they find out later. They follow me on social media and they see me post something, a rainbow or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I take a lot of pride in being like boots on the ground, mm-hmm. changing people's hearts and minds mm-hmm. like day by day in a lot of these places.
Okay. Quote, around in third, headed for home, it's a brown-eyed handsome man, unquote.
Yeah, doing research. I love it.
About a year ago, you released your, was it your debut EP, Diamonds Are Forever?
Correct. Yeah.
And on that EP, you did a cover of John Fogerty's 1985 hit single, Centerfield. And those were just some of the quote I just read are some of the lyrics.
Yes.
In that song. Yeah. So here's my question for you. How does it hit you today as an openly gay country artist singing those words from John Fogerty's hit single from 1985?
Yeah.
About it. You know, it's not about, but you know, you mentioned, you know, a yeah. brown-eyed handsome man. How do those lyrics hit you today when you perform that single? And it's a great cover.
Thank you. It just feels good to sing. You know, the story behind recording that was we were in the studio tracking my debut EP, and I was transitioning from being a professional baseball player to a full-time country music singer. So sort of just in between there. And I had this one song, which was my debut single called Left Field, which was really like the key song of that EP. And my producer, we recorded Left Field and we were joking around and he said, well, you did Left Field. Why don't you do Center Field? And everybody in the band laughed. And then we actually sat with it and realized, wow, that's a good idea. You know, that's an iconic song. I looked on Spotify and on YouTube and I saw some kind of bootleg cover versions, but there wasn't really like a real tentpole, like key cover version of that song. Like I think of Tom Petty, Free Fallin'. I think of John Mayer's version of that as like the key version, you know, that's a cover version and almost like a little tribute. Or Tracy Chapman, talk about queer artists, Tracy Chapman and Fast Car, and how there's now a Luke Combs cover that was really, really popular. Mm-hmm. So I realized like that would be great. And I dug into the lyrics and it's always been one of my favorite ballpark songs, but I saw the brown eyed handsome man line and I was like, this is perfect. My debut EP was really a lot, mostly about baseball, and leaving that world, and had addressed a ton of things about love and stuff yet, you know, that was really, tried to capture more of like the soundscape of the ballpark, but there are references and you caught a good one. You caught the most obvious one. And I will say to people who are listening, there are, five or six other queer references in that EP that are yours to find if you want to go find them. So go listen and you might get clued into what I'm saying.
We'll return after this Rainbow Country update.
Hi, this is Michael Anthony Alago, music executive, photographer, author, and you are listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Of TGCD Style Toronto, and I'm a professional feminization makeup artist and stylist providing male-to-female transformations and mentoring to those who identify as a cross-dresser or a trans woman. I first heard of Rainbow Country and Mark Tara in trying to find a radio station that specifically caters to the LGBT community, and I'm so grateful I found this station. It's crucial having a platform like Rainbow Country that welcomes all aspects of the queer community, including allies like myself and what I do. It casts a spotlight on specific needs and interests of human beings, ensuring that people from all walks of life are being validated. It's a real privilege to be able to work with cross-dressers and trans women by helping them align themselves with their feminine energy through the glorious feminization process. So, I want to thank Rainbow Country and Mark Tara for providing this platform for all of us.
Hey, In June 2014, I was fortunate enough to cover North America's first World Pride that took place in Toronto. The interviews and footage that I captured was recently turned into a documentary that's officially out now. A Different Kind of Love is the name of the documentary and can be found on OutTV and OutTV Proud, which is available on Apple TV and other streaming platforms. So, as you may know, in June, I won the Out Loud Best in LGBT Radio Programming from the NCRA, the National Community Radio Association. I received that honor for my episode on Operation Soap, the bathhouse raids that happened on February 5th, 1981. So if you think what I'm doing here on Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond, available on broadcast radio, streaming, as well as an edited podcast. If you think what I'm doing here is worthwhile, I hope you'll consider making a donation to this very outlet you are tuned to. If you're listening to the edited podcast, I hope you'll consider making a donation to an outlet that does carry Rainbow Country. How can you find out? Well, it's simple. Simply head over to marktara.com where everything is connected and hit the donation banner. That's where you'll find all the outlets that carry Rainbow Country. A little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community and beyond. Have your voice, have your support be heard.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station specifically for our issues to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Keegan Hurst, former professional rugby player, coach, raving homosexual, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Love of music, love of sport. You mentioned your dad was or is a baseball coach. I believe he also played baseball.
He's a coach back home, still is. I talked to him.
Was it through your dad that you discovered your love for sport?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I was always definitely drawn to sports. We were always outside growing up. So, it was through my dad and just through, as a young kid in school, that's kind of just what I gravitated towards. I always loved music, always loved sports. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until years later that I really found out, that I was gay and really identified that and accepted that. And that took a while to come to grips with, I think.
How old were you when you when you started recognizing that, hey, you know, like I've got these same-sex attractions and that's who I am, when did that start crystallizing for you?
Sometime in high school, I would say. I mean, I had girlfriends growing up, but and it wasn't really until I was like 21 until I really started the coming out process. First, just coming out to myself and then my friends and family. But it was a couple of years before that that I started to just feel different than, you know, as an athlete, as a jock, you get pushed into this hyper macho world. And kind of like, I very much, was in that crowd and I guess pushed to fit in with that crowd. You feel that kind of pressure. Mm-hmm. But I always felt different and definitely, it took me a while to identify that. And, you know, going back to like that song that I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Left Field, the chorus of the first song I ever released was, "You gotta be who you are." That's like the first line in the chorus. Yeah. And that's, I was thinking like, you know, I knew I was going to get some attention as a pro baseball player, who had come out and was doing music and, you know, I know the people who follow me and I see that. I know there's a ton of younger LGBTQ people. So I just wanted to put that message out there first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gotta be who you are. Like that's the baseline, you know, to finding happiness or love or fulfillment. Like that's the message I wish I could have heard when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You're somebody like me singing about that. So to answer your question, it's been a process. The coming out is always a process for everybody, and it's different for everybody. But
ain't that the truth?
Been a journey.
So before music, you were a professional baseball player. I believe you played in what, 8 countries over 5 years.
Did
what's that?
I did. Yeah, I played. I was on this wild kind of ride of. You know, you play one place in the summer and then you play winter ball, like south of the border. I played in Guatemala City and a couple different places in South America and traveled around. And it really was a journey, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And while you were a professional baseball player, you decided to publicly come out. So why was it important for you to come out when you did? While you were a professional baseball player, was there a reason? Was there a spark? Was there an event that happened that led you to want to say, this is who I am now?
Yeah, it was really just getting tired of feeling like I was hiding. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a period where I was out to some people within the sport and the sports world, but not really posting about it publicly. Mm-hmm. My partner at the time, I ended up going to Christmas with his family, and we took this great picture under the Christmas tree, and I wanted to post it just on Instagram. Like it was just, you know, a great holiday and a big moment in my life to find love and feel like I was finally happy at the time. And I wanted to post it, and I opened up Instagram to post it like anybody would do. And I just felt this weight, like, oh, my God, you know, this I've never posted anything like this before. Like I was aware that it would become a media moment, you know, as a pro baseball player posting something like that, because there weren't any other out gay pro baseball players actively playing at the time. So I kind of just waited. I didn't end up posting that picture, but I waited until the next season rolled around, when I was back on the field, and, decided to do an interview about it and just tell my truth. I tried to treat it more as like inviting in than coming out, because, the way that I tried to say was, this is just one part of me. you know, I play baseball. I love music. I'm in love with a guy like that. That was really, that was it. And I invited people to just know one more thing about me. And, I think that because of that, like, we were able to get a lot of acceptance, maybe more than you would accept, more than you would expect from within the sports world, and finally getting, inviting those people in and inviting those people to know that, you know, one of them, an athlete, you know, is in this LGBTQ plus community in baseball, and that really I'm not too different than my teammates. You know, I still want to play well and help the team win. And I'm just kind of, you know, sharing this one part about my life because I wish I could have seen somebody like me in baseball. And now I founded a charity that's called Proud to Be in Baseball, which is a 501c3 nonprofit based here in Tennessee, based in Nashville. And we're a member of the Tennessee Pride Chamber. So we do a ton of different events that basically try to support and encourage younger LGBTQ plus kids who play sports. So I tried to build the thing that I didn't have as a young closet queer athlete, and something that could help younger people like me.
When you came out as a professional baseball player, you became the first professional baseball player to come out. I asked you before about, you know, any sort of pushback, any sort of reaction in the country music scene to you being gay. When you came out in the sports world, what was the reaction like? I'm sure you got pushback, but overall, what was the reaction like for you? And how did you deal with those negative, the negative aspect of it?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was definitely afraid of a negative reaction. But I, at the end of the day, it was something like I wanted to do for myself, you know, and for younger versions of myself. So I had a very strong purpose with it. And it was very similar to music, country music, similar demographics, you know, of people who like baseball and people who like country music. So it was probably about 90% positive, 10% negative messages on social media and comments and stuff. And like I said, I still get some of those, but it really is mostly positive. I feel like,
but what about from within, like from your fellow teammates, from some of your coaches?
Yeah.
How did they react?
I think the coaches were a bit surprised. I wanted to tell, someone on our coaching staff, my coach who I was closest to, you know, just before I did the public interview, my teammates already knew. My teammates were cool, but, you know, the coaching staff was a little more distant. So I let him know. I think he was a bit surprised, but they saw, I think they didn't necessarily know what to do, you know, but they saw me just keep showing up and keep going to practice and going to the games. And I actually played better because I felt more free. So I think that, like, even though they were a bit hesitant at the beginning and hadn't gone through any other players coming out that they had ever coached before. I think once they saw that I was literally just trying to keep my spot on the team and play well and do all the things that I already did, you know, they didn't mind. And they actually, I hope that I was able to, earn some of their respect and that they were able to see why it was something that was bigger than baseball, bigger than any game that we could win or anything, something that could actually help people in the real world. And, I don't think I was the first ever baseball player to come out publicly. There's a guy who played in the 80s named Glenn Burke who came out after he retired. And then a guy who played in the 90s, Billy Bean, who was an inspirational figure for me, who I was very lucky to have met before he passed away. but who also had come out after he retired. So just like I say, like,
but you were actively playing though.
Actively playing. Yes. And just like in country music, like, you know, there have been a whole history of LGBTQ artists who people hadn't, the world hasn't been ready for, you know, or people have felt like they've had to hide. And it's the same thing in baseball. I get messages from players, ex-players who are decades removed from playing, but they wish they could have come out, and just maybe the times weren't ready for it, or it would have, you know, sort of, gone pretty bad, and they would have lost their job in the sport or in music. And I just feel very lucky that I'm living in a time where I can be authentic, and I can just show up and try to make good music. And back when I was playing sports, and try to play well, you know, that's really it. I'm not pushing any other agenda except just trying to live my life. And I think that, you know, gradually, like, we're seeing more and more acceptance, and it just feels good to be in a position to be able to do that.
Is there a documentary about you?
So there, we've shot some stuff. There's a little project in the works. I don't have too much to tell about it yet, but I'm sure when the time comes, I would love to come back on and tell you a little more about it.
So what's that? Is that going to be essentially like an aspect of your life, or?
I think.
Or what?
What I say is, like, you know, my mission behind everything that I do, like when I was playing baseball, I just wanted to see somebody like me, you know, when I was a kid. Now, when I was a young closeted queer kid, listening to country radio in the car, I would have killed to hear somebody like me. So right now as an adult, I'm making that type of music that my younger self would have wanted to hear. So it's really is the same mission as that. You know, the things I would have needed, like the charity is the thing I could have needed to be able to get to know other people like me when I was a kid playing sports. The music is what I needed to listen to, you know, documentary is what I needed to watch. You know, I would have killed to be able to go on Netflix and watch something about a young queer baseball player and country music singer. It's the same mission, and that's kind of like the driving force behind a lot of the stuff that I do. And I'm just excited for the things that we have coming. I have a ton of new music coming out later this year and early next year that we're already recording, and other projects that you've hinted at in the works that I can't fully say yet, but it's good stuff.
Okay. some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
There's only three. Okay. Day or night?
Oh, I'm a morning person. I'm up early. I was up at 6. I get tired at night. I'm daytime all the way. Even though I'm a musician, because even all of our music stuff is at night, so I have to like have some coffee and stay up. But I'm a morning person.
Okay, don't forget these are quick.
Okay,
so
quick.
You did day or night? Red or white?
Oh, I'm wearing a red shirt. I'm wearing a red Nashville shirt. I'll go red.
Okay. Return a ring or cock ring?
Well, I'll go return a ring. That's a good one. I'll go return a ring because that's the name of one of my recent singles.
Yes, so, I know. I had to go there.
What else you got?
No, that's it. That's it.
Oh, that's it. Oh, only three. I thought I was
three.
All right.
No. Do you, this just popped into my mind. Do you remember the first time you ever heard your song on radio?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really special moment. And it wasn't just like local radio. It was my debut single we were able to land on Sirius XM Country Pride. So I was on my way to the airport, actually, in Nashville to fly up to play a Pride Festival in New Jersey. This was Pride Month 2022. And I was listening to the channel because that's the channel I like, and especially during Pride Month, because that's when they run that one. And I heard it, and I took a little video. I tried to take a little video, but I was shaking. I was so excited, so it was just a very special feeling.
Here's my last question for you, and it's simply this: what do you hope your audiences come away with after they've heard? You know, they've heard your music, they've heard your songs. What do you hope your audiences come away with?
That's a big question. I just hope that people feel inspired and that people feel like maybe there's a country singer that is like them, you know, and they can hear their lives through my songs. And it's all the music is presented in a way that you know, there's very little toxic masculinity. You know, it's very much the open and accepting sound and vibe, and it rocks out a little bit too. And I feel like, I hope people can gain confidence in themselves and, feel like they can hear and listen to and feel connected to somebody in country music who's making music for them. So that's what I hope.
Well done. Well done. Brian Ruby, well said, well done, well recorded. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Found and Lost is available on your favorite streaming service. And by the way, stay tuned because in hour two, I'll be playing a 3-song Brian Ruby set. Proud to Be in Baseball is Brian's nonprofit committed to advocating, educating, and creating opportunities for the next generation of LGBTQ people in baseball. For even more, simply visit ProudToBeInBaseball.org. And for all things Ruby, BrianRuby.com.
When we talk about the LGBTQ community as if it is something that just exists, I think we're indulging in wishful thinking. Communities aren't something that spring fully formed from the ether. They require some assembly. They need to be constructed. Still thinking about the 70s here, when I came out in Toronto, there were lots of different parts that didn't quite fit together. First, there were gay men who went to bars and baths. Most were pretty deeply in the closet. They shared a dirty secret and some overlapping friendship networks, but not much else. Then there were a self-proclaimed clutch of young activists around the body politic and the Gay Alliance Towards Equality, myself included, who tended to be a bit judgmental about anyone not properly out and willing to throat ram. In fact, one writer to the Body Politic called us the high principle Jesus Christ farts of the movement. Then there were the new class of gay entrepreneurs who were establishing the first gay businesses along Church Street. The Community Homophile Association was perhaps the largest organization in town, and it was run by George Hislop, a part owner of several of these businesses. The entrepreneurs saw the activists as troublemakers rocking a precarious boat, and we saw them as conservatives unable to embrace gay liberation. We felt much the same about MCC, the major gay-focused Christian organization at the time. When women from Chat, calling themselves the Cunts, broke off and denounced Hislop as a sexist in 1971, it made clear that a lot of women were also on a pretty different wavelength. Most lesbians were much more comfortable in feminist circles than hanging around with gay men. Not that they all agreed either. There were always the lesbian socialist feminists versus the radical feminist lesbians, and so on. Trans organizing was small and generally had little to do with any of us. Trans men were often concerned with distinguishing themselves from lesbians, and trans women were unwelcome in most lesbian spaces. Gay men were generally suspicious, unclear on the differences between sexual orientation and sexual identity. So it was all a bit of a hot mess. I suppose if you see community like a dysfunctional family where everybody fights all the time, you could call it a community. But if by community you mean people who are cooperating and fighting for a common goal, that probably didn't really happen until the 1980s, when we were all faced with challenges that we couldn't overcome alone. This is Tim McCaskill, a gay liberation dinosaur from another planet and author of Queer Progress.
Hi, I'm singer-songwriter Steve Grand. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Taking us to hour two of Rainbow Country, Pet Shop Boys, Monkey Business.
Hi, this is Police Constable Danielle Botno, also known as LGBT Cop, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara.
Rainbow Country. This is hour two of Rainbow Country, where I feature music from LGBT artists, independent artists, voices that we've come to know and love in classic disco, classic 80s, classic house. So if you stay with me, if you stick with me, I hope you think I'm bringing you music worth hearing. Starting us off, a classic house set.